Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News Now. If it looks like a bubble and it acts like a bubble, is it a housing bubble? As a buyer, it sure may feel that way, especially if the competition for the house of your dreams is willing to go above the asking price. That's happening all the time in the Twin Cities market. But if you're a seller, things look pretty good. You're getting more money than you thought you could. There are lots of people to choose from. Unless, of course, you're selling because you're also buying. So what's happening in the real estate market in our city and yours? I hope you'll give us the neighborhood view. If you've been trying to buy a house, what are you encountering? Feel like you're not getting enough for your money? Is student loan debt affecting your buying power? Are rising interest rates something you're concerned about? I'd like to hear from you if you are a first-time home buyer. Talk to me this morning about what it's like out there in the market. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR. David Arbit is with us. He's the Director of Research and Economics for Minneapolis Area Association of Realtors. David, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Carrie.
Herb Towsley is with us, Director of Real Estate Programs at the University of St. Thomas, also with me in the studio. Herb, good to have you here.
Morning, Carrie.
Let's talk about the buying market in some different price tiers. Herb, if you are looking in your first home, and let's say you're somewhere in the $150,000 to $250,000 range, what's it like for you?
Well, we've looked at the different price ranges and how short the market is in different areas, and it seems like the lower to moderate priced homes are the ones that are in the shortest supply, that you have like less than a 1 month supply out there. And those are the homes that most first-time buyers are going to be looking for, is something at the lower end of the price range.
Yeah, how do we get here? I mean, why is there such short supply?
Well, part of it is because there's just not enough homes on the market, and part of it is because we're not building enough new homes.
Okay, that's what I was curious about.
Yeah.
So there is not enough brand new inventory of starter homes.
Yes, and it's hard for builders to build starter homes profitably because property values have gone way up. You know, materials, lumber, concrete, you know, those have all gone way up. They've got labor shortages, and so there's a lot of headwinds there that make it hard for them to build a house for, say, $200, $225 or $1,000 and do it profitably.
So, David, this is about developers who look at the market and they look at the cost of bringing new houses online that first-time buyers can afford.
Right.
And they see what?
They see a lot of challenges ahead of them. We like to cite, so I think Herb accurately said, new construction levels are lagging below where they were the last time there was this much demand. So that's a problem, but obviously not everybody is going to be a good fit for a new home where new homes are being built. So we like to cite two things. There's kind of a spatial mismatch and a product mismatch. So where we're building homes isn't necessarily where today's millennials want to buy. And then the product, right? Tomorrow's home buyers won't look like yesterday's. We have vibrant Hmong and Somali communities who are looking for different products, multi-generational housing, all these things. People are focusing on walkability, amenities. That's not where builders are building because of these challenges.
Okay, so where are builders building that first-time home buyers may not want to be?
Yeah, so a brief shout-out to BATSE, the Builders Association of the Twin Cities. They have great permit data. David Siegel and his team work really hard on that. So they show the Lakevilles, the Blaines, and other wonderful suburban communities that are a little bit far out for millennials, don't quite have the jobs that are able to sustain these mortgages.
Walkability and all this other stuff you're talking about.
Walkability not as good as what most of today's buyers are kind of demanding. And that's boomers and millennials alike, I should add.
Let me get a call in here from Sam in Rochester. Hi, Sam. How's this look to you?
Well, thanks for taking my call. You know, Rochester, we're blessed with some of the fastest kind of growth in the state. My wife and I were a young couple. We're both 24. Mm-hmm. We were paying rent that we didn't feel like we could sustain, just in terms of we felt kind of sick to our stomachs paying that amount every month.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, of course, started looking for a home. I mean, it's the next logical step for a young married couple. Unfortunately, one thing that we noticed is that whenever we tried to put an offer in on a home, it seemed like there was always something coming in above list price. I was curious, is this indicating a demographic shift too, with like an older generation of people who are looking to downsize, who have the purchasing power to come in at, I don't know, 10% above list?
Good question.
And buy out the young couples who can't afford that.
Let's go back to the data guy. What's the story on that, David?
Yeah, so there's a couple good organizations out there that have put out some data that kind of support this notion that you don't win by not building at the high end, because there are families who are a little bit better capitalized who can come in and compete in cash. So the caller's question is legitimate and is reasonable and is real. But that said, you know, there's over 10 months supply of $1 million plus homes in the metro. There's under, just like Herb said, there's under 1 or 2 months supply for homes under 200 or 300K in the metro. So the shortages are in the affordable end. There's still a lot of supply given demand in the upper end in the luxury market, but we still don't win if we don't give those folks product to buy at the high end.
So Herb, Sam was asking about how about these, what I think of maybe as baby boomer homeowners. Family has moved out. They want to simplify. They want to downsize. What role are they playing in the market?
Well, the caller from Rochester, there's a couple of things going on there. You know, with what the Mayo Clinic is doing and the Destination Medical Center is really increasing the problem there, because there's a lot of people that are moving there, and a lot of the jobs are, you know, fairly good income jobs. And so,
which, of course, Rochester says, yay, this is not a problem for us.
Yeah,
right?
They love that.
But where's everybody going to live?
But that's, you know, driving home prices up. And so for the first time buyers in Rochester, you know, again, unless they're willing to move, you know, farther out of town, it's very difficult because of all the activity that's going on there.
But the other thing I was asking you about is, what role are baby boomer homeowners playing in this, which is they've had their home, they've built up equity. Are they downsizing, as I think Sam was asking about, and playing a particular role in the market as it is today?
Yeah, a lot of them are downsizing. You know, they had the big home in the suburbs, and yeah, they've got a lot of equity, and you know, they just don't want to care for and maintain a big home. And so you're seeing a lot of them, you know, move in closer to the core. They like the factor of the walkability and all the different activities that are available close to the core. So yeah, you're definitely seeing that affecting the market.
And because they have equity, they do have the ability to come in with extra, to go over the asking price, right?
Yeah, a lot of them will come in, you know, an all cash offer with no contingencies, that, you know, they're prepared to go over asking price. And if it's a home that they like, they'll, within reason, do whatever it takes.
If you've just gotten in on the conversation, it's a discussion about home buying. Really interested if you're in this situation of being a first time home buyer. Where are you looking in the metro? What's the market like? Are you running into something David said about, well, we don't want to live in the far out fringe suburbs. We want to live in the city, but the prices are expensive and we've got student loan debt. Yeah, what are you encountering as you look for your first time home? And what does it mean to the way you're thinking about where you're going to live? Are you holding back? Are you making some compromises about what you're going to buy and where you're willing to live? Talk to me about what this looks like from the neighborhood level. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Naomi says, my husband and I bought our house 4 years ago. Our budget was less than $200,000. Given our income and savings at the time, we wouldn't be able to afford a similar house in our neighborhood in Roseville now. David, has it changed that much in the last 4 years?
Well, let's see. In the last 4 years, we've probably averaged about 5-6% a year. So 4 years, it's 24%. That's pretty significant.
Wow. Yeah.
So a $200,000 home may be now worth $250,000. So that is out of reach for a lot of folks. Some folks have been fortunate enough to have wage gains through their job, their current job, or through job changes. So that's a good thing. But I don't think most people have seen incomes rise by 25% in the last 4 years. Maybe inflation at 3% or 2% per year. You know, I think Herb mentioned a good point that I think, yes, we have failed to provide single level townhomes for our baby boomers. So they are going into amenitized, you know, call it South Minneapolis, Northeast, wherever, even the inner ring suburbs of Richfield, St. Louis Park, others, Edina's in that group. You know, they want to be close in and they're looking for remodeled homes, and they are fairly cash flush buyers. So when they do have to compete with, you know, first time buyers, it is hard not to feel like you're at a disadvantage.
You know, I want to make sure I understood what you were saying there. You said there is not a lot of housing with the amenities that baby boomer downsizers want.
That's right.
Why?
You'd have to ask the builders. You know, I think we cite the four L's: lots, labor, lending, and lumber. And all those things have made. So think about a 1 acre lot or a quarter acre lot. If that's gotten 2-3 times more expensive, you kind of have to build more units to make the land pay, to make the project sort of pencil out. So, but we haven't seen them shifting toward density. Where we have seen that, it's largely been rentals because of some changes with millennials. And I'll get really nerdy here, the statute of limitations against construction defects has made builders focus on, you have
Explain,
to carry,
yeah,
you,
you what used are we to talking have about?
To, there was this liability tail that was 10 years against construction defects,
mm-hmm.
where you basically had to hold some contingency money in your pocket. So if the HOA would
as
sue
a builder, you mean?
As a builder, as
okay.
a developer. So that means they couldn't go out and buy the dirt for the next project to sort of, you know, boomerang into the next one.
Interesting.
So there's a lot of complications. Herb mentioned the labor challenges. If labor has gone from $25 an hour to $40 an hour, it's really hard to still build a $250,000 home.
Herb, is that what the numbers look like on the labor, on the construction labor? Wow.
Yeah, there's such a shortage of people in the construction and the trades. You know, a lot of them got out of the business when we went through the last recession.
Right.
A lot of them are getting older and retiring, and we're just not backfilling that market with enough people. And so in order to get the people that they need, is, you know, prices that they have to pay are going up. And as David said, along with lumber prices and material prices, it makes it very hard to build these lower to moderately priced homes. And it creates a bit of an affordability gap because, you know, as the caller had mentioned, you know, the price, if you look at, you know, the last several years, home prices have been going up 5-6%. And medium wages has only been going up, you know, maybe 2-3%. So if that continues,
so our buying power is not obviously keeping pace with.
Yeah,
the price.
And over time, if that continues, it'll just get worse.
Carrie says, we struggled to find a starter home in Rosemount, many 400,000 and up. Wow. Not much under. To the phones to Tori in St. Louis Park. Hi, Tori. You're a real estate agent?
Hi, I am. I was just driving and heard of this topic and had to call in.
Glad you did.
I think that we're as human beings, very particular to get into a box. And what I always tell my buyers, especially first-time home buyers, is let's not get into a box here where we're thinking that it's going to be the highest price that the seller is going to be attracted to, because that is only one component of this offer that we're crafting here. So we discuss all the different components that go into the offer and what is going to make that strong and attractive and what components might make it unattractive. And, you know, in my experience, I have had buyers, cash buyers with no contingencies, lose out to finance offers that were higher. So, you know, this, yes, a lot of people get beat out by cash offers, but it's just not, it's simply not always the case, right? And, you know, for these first-time home buyers, working with people who understand that at the end of the day, we're working with human beings. So the sellers, the listing agent, it's getting on the phone, it's having conversations, it's learning what is really going on with that particular situation, and then knowing how to write that offer that's going to be really strong, even if we're up against, you know, for example, an all-cash offer.
So I think I hear you saying the price doesn't always carry the day, that the seller isn't necessarily going to, you know, take something that's $10,000 above if you have other things you can bring to the table as the buyer. Wow. Yeah, that's surprising. Is that
sometimes, especially if it's a baby boomer seller, for example, you know, $10,000 isn't really as important sometimes as a sooner close date. Maybe they've got something going on and they need to get out of here. So it's really just kind of connecting some dots.
David, you're looking a little skeptical here. Why?
Yeah, I mean, every deal is different, and I'm a little hesitant to weigh in on the contract side because it gets into a legal arena that's a little bit outside of my expertise. Some have raised concerns about love letters and mentioning that family because, well, we don't want to be discriminating against non-family. So we tend to be a little bit more cautious because of fair housing law. But let me say this. You know, the caller does have a good point that money's not everyone's bottom line and that there are other maybe softer benefits than just the cash, the check at the end of the day. And a quicker close if there's any kind of family, if there's a health issue, in cases of divorce, you name it. So there's a lot of ways that non-monetary benefits within a contract do play in.
The love letter is the letter you would write as potential buyers to the sellers to say,
please,
choose
please, please.
Us, right? Does it matter, Herb? I mean, do they work?
You know, they work sometimes. You know, you want to provide some kind of a story or some kind of a background with the offer. So, you know, maybe that the seller won't be just looking at the price, but it would seem to me with my experience talking to people is that, you know, you need to come in and you need to be ready with an offer with no contingencies. It's all cash, ready to close, because it seems to be what a lot of the sellers are looking for.
I want to make sure that as we talk about terms that everybody is, especially if you're a first-time home buyer, contingency means this contract will happen if I can sell my house, right,
That's a real common one. Or, you know, this contract will happen if I can get financing at satisfactory terms. And so there can be a number of different contingencies. And, of course, as a seller, you'd like to see an offer with none.
Just like, I don't want any qualifiers here. I just want somebody who's got the cash and is ready to go.
Yeah, I just want to check.
Right, right. Liz says on Twitter, student loan debt, car loan, rent, and the inability to find a job that pays well enough to get on top of it all. Liz brings up rent, and we heard from our an earlier caller here about paying high rent. I mean, this is a right now, David, we're in a market where you're paying a lot of money for your monthly rent. You're not building any equity, but it's also hard to build savings when you're spending a lot of money on rent.
This is true. So Fred, the Federal Reserve, one of their big data interfaces, Fred has the Minneapolis-St. Paul rents up at, I think it was 4.7%. I don't know if that was for May or for a second quarter, so I'll have to dig in on that a little bit. But so that's 5%. So prices are also 6%, but the incomes of renters and homeowners are always different.
Right.
NAR has great research on this, and they've actually been doing a lot of lobbying in D.C. To sort of change some of the student loan stuff, because that is a real hurdle.
That's the National Association of Realtors.
The National Association,
okay.
Yep.
David Arbit with us, by the way. He's Director of Research and Economics for the Minneapolis Area Association of Realtors, and Herb Towsley with us from the University of St. Thomas, where he's director of the real estate programs. Hearing from you this morning, as a first-time home buyer, what it's like out there on the market, and what are some of the factors that, you know, in your own life, as I mentioned, the student loan debt, the paying a high point for rent, a struggle to come up with a down payment, that are preventing you from getting the house you want, of really being able to compete in this housing market. 651-227-6000-800-242-2828. Blair called from Hastings to say, I'm a first-time buyer. We're closing on the 27th. Congratulations. He says, I'm a veteran. It's been really difficult. It's so expensive. I went into a bidding war with multiple individuals and paid about $13,000 too much, found a home in Invergrove Heights. Herb, what would you say about these bidding wars? I guess the one thing that I always think about is the house is going to cost you more than you think just getting in. So beware of throwing too much extra cash on it. What else would you add?
Well, if you go in and you're looking at a house and there's multiple offers and it's getting bid up, I mean, you have to be aware of what you can do as a buyer. You know, you can expect that maybe you're going to pay more than list price, but you know, you before you go into it have to basically set a line that said, I can go this far and I can't go any farther.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating for people because,
sure,
you know, you hear from a lot of people that, you know, put offers in on multiple houses and, you know, four or five houses, and they haven't got one yet. And they just have to keep going back into that market.
That's I was hearing about that on Twitter, David, people who are saying, I've been doing this for months. We keep getting, every time we hear about a house, there's already four offers on it. What would you say about how to react in a market like that?
Yeah, so it may sound cliche, but stay engaged, stay committed. It does take a little bit of perseverance, more perseverance these days than it did when we had a whole lot of inventory 10 years ago, when it seemed like we had a condo for every man, woman, and child in the metro. But those days are gone. And so, you know, persistence, you know, like Herb said, if you're looking to spend $300,000, I'd say maybe look at homes up to $275,000, knowing that you might go a percent or two or maybe three over. I will go back to our stats, and I think it's important to note, for the first time ever, we were 102 100.2% of original list price received. That's the first time we've ever been over 100% as a metro area.
Ever, even back in the last housing bubble?
I was afraid you'd ask that, Carrie. So our data technically only goes back to January of 2003.
Okay.
So that's at least a 15-year high.
So we're missing the... Are we in a bubble, Herb? I've been using that term, and so have other analysts. What's the story?
There's a lot of people that are asking that question. And prices are going up at a pretty good clip and have been for a while.
And they're not matching incomes, which is one of the factors, right?
But the thing that's different is the lending practices. The lenders have become more responsible about, you know, how they lend, how they underwrite loans. Because, you know, back what got us into all this trouble back in 2005 and 2006 were, you know, all these loans with no money down,
subprime,
no documentation,
teaser
rates, you know, to get you in at, you know, a very low rate. And then after 24 months, it goes way up and you can't afford your house. You're not seeing that anymore. And so I think that's one of the things that's going to keep us from getting into a bubble the way that we had before.
Okay. Listener here says, former developer, current contractor, a lot of the good urban land for sale for potential townhouse and condos is being used for apartments. I think you noted this, David.
Mm-hmm.
Apartment rents are also driving up home prices. To the phones to Ernest in Iron River, Wisconsin. Hey, Ernest, thanks so much for waiting. What's it look like for you? Ernest, hi. Shoot, I think you just got into a dead zone there. Call us back. I want to hear your story. To Jesse in Grand Rapids. Hi, Jesse.
Hey,
hi.
How are you?
Good, doing well. What's your, how do you fit into the discussion here?
Well, I'm a realtor in the Grand Rapids and rural Itasca County area. Mm-hmm. And the comment I kind of wanted to make concerning first-time home buyers is that a lot of the products that are out there to help subsidize some of the costs, you'd be looking at an FHA mortgage or a loan or a USDA rural development loan. You know, these are products that have lower prices or lower interest rates, lower down payment options,
mm-hmm.
but they have a really high bar on certain things like the electrical panels or the way the water heater is configured, things of that sort. Itasca County has some of the oldest housing stock around, and so you've got a house that's actually affordable for a young family, but it can't pass muster because it's not a new construction. And so these younger families find themselves in a bit of a catch-22.
So if you want the lending through some of these special programs, FHA or USDA loans, you have to meet the standards that they set for the property.
Exactly. And so a lot of times if the electrical panel is a little too old or, you know, perhaps it's rural and there's more than 1 acre, then it won't qualify. And the fact on the ground is that just a lot of the affordable housing stock up here is old and rural. Okay. And so it's really tough for a lot of these younger families I work with.
I really appreciate the view from Grand Rapids, Jesse. Thanks for calling and getting in on this. Rachel says on Twitter, we bought our first home outside the FM area 2 years ago. There were three offers by the time we did a walkthrough. The first day the house hit the market, we won a bidding war, quote unquote, and were told that the love letter we wrote was a factor in the seller's decision. I don't know. It's all about the cash for me. I don't know if that would matter or not. To the phones to Mary in St. Paul. Hi, Mary. Your question for our guests.
Hi. I was just wondering, with all of these people that are offering more than asking price, are a lot of people experiencing that their mortgage company's appraisal is coming in much, much lower?
Ah.
Is that causing any problems for anyone? It's caused problems for me right now.
Oh, right now? Really? So
yeah.
What does that mean for you?
We had in a purchase agreement at 360. Our first appraisal came in at 343.
Ouch.
And then we did another appraisal, and it came in at just now today. We got the news it was 320, 324,
jeez,
something like this.
Going in the wrong direction there.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Whoa. But they won't move. The seller isn't interested in moving the price down because they feel really confident that they can get the price they want to get on the market.
Herb, what about appraisals?
I was just curious if this is happening to others.
Good question.
Well, it does come up because home prices are going up so quickly because, you know, appraisals basically, they're looking backward at comparable sales that maybe happened 6 months ago or maybe 2 months ago or maybe 10 months ago. And as the home prices keep going up, the comparables don't come in necessarily to support what the new price is, especially if you're in a bidding war. And so that has been an issue. And so then, you know, the buyer either has to come up with more down payment, or, you know, maybe the seller would consider moderating the price, but, you know, usually not. But that has been something that's been coming up lately.
Talking this hour, if you've just gotten in on the conversation, about what it's like to be a first-time home buyer in a red-hot market, hearing from you with questions, if you're out there buying a house or selling a house, and interesting to hear from some of the real estate agents in the market as well. We'll get a look at the latest news when we come back, more of your calls and questions. Also want to talk about this issue of student loan debt. I was looking at some statistics about how it accounts for the decline in the number of millennials who can be out in the market and buying homes. Back to the conversation now. Herb Towsley with us from the University of St. Thomas, and David Arbit with us from the Minneapolis Area Association of Realtors. Interesting perspective here from Margaret. David, she says, 3 to 4 times a month, there are personal notes in my mailbox. We would like to buy your house. No inspection. It's tempting but impossible to find similarly priced senior housing 3 to 4 times a month. Some 20% higher than the Zillow price. And then she says, where would I go? This is what we were talking about. I think you said about the lack of amenitized housing for people that are ready to move out.
Right. That's right. So we, as a region, we've failed. And I want to say it's been a public sector failure, private sector failure. You know, the way regulation is, the way we haven't been able to bring competitive product to market. And we haven't been supplying these baby boomers with single level townhomes or condos with maybe a lofted living space for a kid or a grandkid who comes to visit. There just isn't product for them to go to. So think of how many, who lives longer, Carrie, men or women?
Yeah, women.
Women. So think of how many women are in five-bedroom, three-bath homes. And, you know, freedom's a great thing, and people can live where they want to. But there's a lot of product sort of lagging that hasn't been brought online because it's kind of being occupied. She loves it. She loves her church, her synagogue, her mosque. She likes the community. She doesn't want to leave.
Yeah.
Or he, or whoever it is. So it's not freeing up entry-level, affordable product. That's causing frustration in the market.
Are there other cities that you think get this right that are modeling this for the Twin Cities?
I think some do better, but everyone's struggling with the same things: rising labor prices, rising lot prices, and a shortage of lots, and everything that we've been talking about.
Herb, any city come to mind?
I would agree with David that you know, there may be some that are a little bit better, but again, the price of land and, you know, the impact fees and everything, the permit fees that builders have to pay, make it really hard for them to do the moderately priced houses. And so it's a difficult situation.
Yeah, single level thing resonates with me. My mother just bought a new house, and that was prime. Even though she has no health issues, that was the deal breaker.
Aging
it had
back
to be on one level.
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
Call here from Cynthia in Minneapolis. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi.
Hi. What'd you want to talk to us about?
Well, I am a new buyer up in Minneapolis.
Ah.
I come from Florida, and I'm 64, so what do? I bought a three-bedroom, one-bath home all on the second floor.
Okay.
The way I had to do it, though, because I'm a real estate agent in Florida, I was tired of constantly being told multiple offers due by such and such date. So I told and I'm bought in North Minneapolis. I just thought it's really the best place to invest right now.
Mm.
And I'm getting off track here, but I really think that I've seen that the city is trying to do things with the homes up there that have been, you know, falling into foreclosure. I bought mine for $225, and the way I did it was I researched online the foreclosures, and then I tracked down the house that I wanted. I wanted a Tudor. And then I found out that the guy that bought it was flipping it, of course. And I bought it as is, which as a real estate agent is the dumbest thing to do.
Why?
But, well, you know.
You mean no appraisal?
You don't know what you're getting into. Yeah.
Oh, because no appraisal.
And, yeah.
Wow.
You don't know what you're getting yourself into. But so far, so good. I just have been told that my roof is in really bad repair as far as it was installed incorrectly. And
oh, boy.
But that's okay.
But you're ready for that.
I'll get through all that. But I really think that the city would be helpful in getting, I know about that market you're talking about less than $200,000. You want to keep a mortgage payment around $1,200, especially if you've got student debt, which seems like everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the my friend said that one of her daughters bought a flip, and you know, it was like $180,000, all brand new inside. And I really think, in a way, they should give flippers a little bit more of a better deal, you know, by buying those places.
Yeah,
North Minneapolis.
I'm glad you brought up the flippings. We were hearing a lot about that and the run up, Herb, to the last bubble. What's the status on that?
Well, there are still people out there that are flipping houses. There's still opportunities in certain areas. And, you know, typically what you find is, you know, you'll find a house that was built in the 1960s in a first ring suburb. And the original owners have been living there ever since. It hasn't been updated in 30 or 40 years. Yet it's in a good neighborhood and on a good lot. And so there's still opportunities where somebody can go in and update that house and flip it and make some money.
Then again, those are the very people we were talking about who need senior, you know, housing with amenities, right?
Right.
And the market doesn't look great for them at the moment. So I don't know how many of those places there are.
Well,
more
and it's harder to find the moderately priced places because, you know, a lot of the cities, and David alluded to this before, is that, you know, if you can get more housing units on a given piece of property, get more density, you can bring the price down. But there's a lot of cities that don't want to do that, that don't encourage density, and that keeps prices up.
Yeah.
That's right.
David?
Yeah, so there's sort of two ends of the spectrum. There is a lot of investor activity because there's opportunities for investment and there's cash flow, and until the system is changed, I think that's going to continue, and that's okay. There's two ends to the spectrum to note. One is sort of the 50th in France phenomenon where people are buying $400,000-$600,000 homes, tearing them down and building $3-4 million.
Are you serious?
That's a thing that's happening.
Wow.
That's a thing that's happening. But the other end of the spectrum is what Minneapolis is going through right now with their comp plan and their density ordinance. And so if the city of Minneapolis allows developers to build fourplexes anywhere in the city or on commercial corridors or between Lowry and 38th or whatever it is, well, what are going to be the first targets for teardowns? Mm. $150,000 homes,
right,
that families, first-level buyers, millennials suffering under the burdens of student loan debt are looking at. So we could be shooting ourselves in the foot. So we should be really thinking about those unintended consequences of policy.
Just a note here on the student loan debt. The Federal Reserve of New York reported recently the student loan debt accounted for a pretty steep decline in the numbers of people in their late 20s and early 30s who owned homes. So millennials who normally would be able to get into that market, but can't because they've spent a lot of money on tuition at St. Thomas, Herb.
Well,
there you go.
We love those alumni, though.
That's right. To the phones to Harry in Bloomington. Hi, Harry. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, how are you guys?
Doing good. What's your situation? Are you in the home buying market?
Yes and no. So I'm one of those 20-year-olds with student loan debt, trying to do a good job to get that paid down, as well as, you know, put away for retirement, HSA, all that good stuff.
Right.
I guess I have two questions, the first of which is, you know, we've seen renting, you know, continue to grow and grow and grow. And at the same point in time, as a renter myself and my wife, we continue to see those renting costs continue to grow and grow. And I understand the housing side, the lack of supply, and trying to make sure that those $100,000, $200,000 homes are actually, you know, there's at least some margin there to where it makes sense for them to build them. But on the renting side, you know, you see a lot of these, you know, renting complexes going up. They're million-dollar builds. You know, there's got to be more margin there. So I guess the first question is, you know, why isn't that price at least stabilizing, if not coming down? Because obviously there's great demand for it.
Mm-hmm.
You think that that supply, you think that the competitive market would help dictate that a little bit. I'm not seeing that. And then the second point is, you know, with the housing market right now, we're starting to sort of put our toe in the water. But again, we're looking at this and saying, well, my gosh, you know, we're going to be overpaying for whatever we're getting. And at the same point, you know, if eventually things do cool down in the housing market, you know, we don't want to get in a situation where we let emotion
exactly
get in the way of logic and
exactly
overpay for it. And then 5-6 years later, we decide to move. And now we're going to take a bath on it.
Really good point there, because if you pay too much and the next correction is coming, and it's cyclical, David, and it is coming, we think. I don't know in the housing market, but, you know, in the stock market, then you're in a situation where you're upside down in your mortgage if you aren't careful. What's your advice on that?
Yeah, that's possible. It's a little bit difficult to see home prices falling in the short term, given how out of balance supply and demand are. But that said, you know, consumer
but
confidence.
You said short term. I mean, what's your definition of short term? In the next couple years?
A couple years. You know, most economists agree that we're probably closer to the next recession than we are far away from the last one. Mm-hmm. We've heard that a lot, and we tend to agree with that. And nothing goes straight up or straight down forever. When the next downturn does come, this is why we're trying to encourage people. And as an industry, we're really trying to make people think long term. Where if you're looking at a short-term play of only holding a home for 2 or 3 years, you could end up a little bit underwater were there to be a 4 or 5 or 6% price correction. The next correction is very unlikely to look like the last, where we had a 30% decline from 230K down to about 150 for the whole metro. So we're very much unlikely to see that kind of sort of nationwide decline. Now, that's not to say some coastal markets, Seattle, San Francisco, New York, couldn't see some more dramatic declines than we.
Herb, how do you see this?
Well, I agree with David. Our market is pretty stable, and I like to say it's kind of boring because we don't have the extreme
the
ups and downs.
Swings,
but boring,
right,
is good. But then your caller was also talking about the rental market here,
right.
I mean, you're seeing apartments going up on almost every corner, it seems. And part of that is because as a metro area for 15 or 20 years, we really underbuilt and we didn't build enough housing units. And now, we're catching up. There's a lot more household formation. And Minneapolis, St. Paul is one of the tightest rental markets in the country. The, vacancy metro-wide is, right around 3%, where, 5% or so is considered normal.
Boy, I think that's really tough for
and that
people.
Pushes rents up.
Geez,
So you're seeing those 4 or 5% of your rent increases as a result.
Again, with your income not keeping pace to that.
Right.
You're really in a tough position if you rent. Jake says we lost on 5 aggressive offers, including one 66,000 over listing to people with more cash on hand. On all 5, the winner waived their right to inspect. I think that's crazy. No buyer, particularly a first timer, should have to take on that kind of risk. Can we say something about inspections and appraisals here, David?
What I'll say about that is that, we advise that every buyer be protected, and it's a good thing to be protected. But in this current climate, some people are stepping a little bit outside of that, and that's
okay.
You don't
advise it. What?
You
think it's okay?
I don't personally not. It's a market. It's a free market where people will do what they will do. And
it just seems risky.
It's not a personal decision I'd make. It's not something that we typically advise. But talk with your agent, work through the details, and see if it makes sense for you. I don't think I'm going to gamble like that, but others may.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you're looking at the inspections, I mean, you got to consider the property and consider the home. I mean, if it's a home that was built 2 years ago, the structure itself is probably okay. But, then you also want to check things out as far as the property goes. Are there easements? Are there encroachments? Are there things, you don't want to close without knowing that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, here's Cynthia, who it sounds like has the money, the resources to put a new roof on, but because the old roof was put on the wrong way. But that's the kind of surprise I don't think you want on the day you close. Okay, to Nathaniel in Minnetonka. Hi, Nathaniel.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
First-time home buyer, utilizing the VA loan.
Congrats.
I'm up in Little Falls today at Camp Ripley, so my fiance has to go to the home inspection today. And I'm kind of wondering on her behalf specifically, what kind of questions should a first-time home buyer ask the inspector?
Ah, excellent. Herb, what do you think?
Well, again, depending on the age of the home, it's going to make a difference of the questions that you'd ask. But, you're going to want to ask about the big items, the mentioned the roof, foundation, heating, cooling, is there a well? Is there a septic system? Is it hooked up to city sewer? I mean, those are all things that you're going to want to know.
When you're asking about the roof, are you that's a big dollar item if you have to replace it. So what are you specifically asking?
Well, you want to have the inspector check how long ago was the roof put on and how many years can you reasonably expect it to last. So, if it's a roof that was put on 7 years ago and they last, 15 years, you can expect maybe another 8 years before you have to do it.
I think it's time to get our home inspector back in the show. It's been a while since I've talked to him, but these are some really good questions for him. To the phones here to Joe in St. Louis Park. Hi, Joe.
Hi, I just wanted to respond to the one buyer that you had, a prospective buyer that was holding off because he's waiting for a potential correction. And my understanding in looking at the research is over the last 40 years, we've only really had two corrections, the last one being a major one. The one before that came through the 91 recession. We only backed up about 1.8% in sale price. And that was mainly or predominantly in the upper bracket market.
Okay.
So what can happen is the market may cool down a little bit where you don't have the multiple offers happening, but the prices are not going to come down 10, 15, 20% if history is going to be any indication of what we can expect.
Looks like David agrees with that. Thank you, Joe.
I would agree with Joe on that wholeheartedly. Long term, when we track our data all the way back to 1960, and that's paper records, so not our digitized data in our SQL server, but for paper records going back to 1960, home prices since 1960 have risen at 5% per year. When we take away 3% to inflation, we're left with 2% real price appreciation per year. So not only will a home kind of keep pace with inflation, it kind of pays you an unrealized gain of 2% per year on top of that. So that's why long term matters. And what's interesting is, you know, people used to move every, I think it was 5 to 7 years, which is kind of six right in the middle there. And now that's gone to about 10. So we are staying a little bit longer. Partly because we can't find anywhere else to go, partly because we're enjoying the ride up in prices, partly because new construction's lagging, partly because there's not anything else affordable, partly because we feel rate locked at 4% and we don't want to give that up to get 4.6 or 4.7%. So there's a lot going on there.
Annie says on Twitter, we almost had to wait on buying a house due to record low inventory. People aren't moving out of their houses and the quickness of the market, the few houses available go way too fast. I think I can squeeze Sophie in here. Hey, Sophie, you're in Duluth. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm a single millennial, first-time homeowner.
Glad you called. Yeah, what's the story?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I've experienced a couple of the things in my process of buying a home that you mentioned here in that under 200,000 range, both like you know, the appraisal coming in lower, and you know, my buyer accepted it because it was they were on a timeline, but also in applying for, you had to get pre-approval, and the offer was accepted within, you know, 4 hours of being put in.
Yeah.
And it was in that loan application process too, whether you get FHA or first-time homebuyer, you know, assistance, that a lot of the homes that were in my price range didn't qualify. And I knew that only because if you're going to buy out a home in that price range, you need to accept some problems with it. And so, you know, I've furnace is going to need to be replaced, you know, original windows, like some, you know, foundation stuff, like a roof that's got some problems, but you just have to be willing to, like, I'm lucky enough that I have family that can work on this and fix some of it with you. But it, I mean, it there wasn't any options in a price range that I could afford.
That's interesting to hear your story on this. I mean, that, I think that's kind of tough because, as I said at one point, the house is always going to cost you more than you think. You know, you're going to want to do stuff to it. And then if you have to do basic stuff like that, which you really can't wait, you have to have a working furnace in this state. What's your advice on this, Herb? I mean, how much to accept if you're in Sophie's situation? How do you think about, I may have to spend another $20,000 over the next few years to...
Well, again, a good home inspection is going to make a big difference because you don't like surprises because they're usually not good ones at that point. And so if you know what you're getting into and you know that you're going to have to spend some money after you move in and you feel that you're paying a price that's appropriate to that, you know, that's great. But you just want to go in with your eyes open. So if there is things to be done, that you know ahead of time.
David, you look like you have some advice on this.
Yeah, I mean, buyers should know that every house has inspection issues, even new ones. And sometimes people feel kind of protected or insulated from those because they buy new. But oftentimes, you know, we'll see construction contractor grade, you know, quality. We'll see lower quality furnaces. We'll see, you know, other issues. The house is built too tight without the home return ventilation or something like that. So, you know, every house has issues. People are having to make some concessions to get into a home. And oftentimes, if you just work with the seller, so have your agent talk to the seller's agent and try to see if they can meet somewhere in the middle. Yeah. And we're finding that
and you're finding that that works.
Sellers are in a
because
position.
Because sellers don't have to do that.
That's
now
the thing. Sellers are in such a good position when it comes to negotiating power that they have the power and the sway. So they don't always have to accept it. But work with them. See what you can do and stay persistent.
Alex says on Twitter, what's stopping me? If I buy a house, I pay $1,300 plus property taxes. Yeah, this is when I say it's going to cost you more than you think. Your property taxes are probably going to increase. If something breaks, I fix it and I have to buy new things or I keep renting. I pay $1,400 a month. And if something breaks, the landlord fixes it. And equity, risk everything in the next recession. What would you guys say about renting in the kind of market we're in right now versus buying? Advice, Herb?
Well, I think that the perception of renting has changed. And, you know, it used to be, you know, people rented because they had to. Now, you know, more people, especially millennials, are renting because they choose to.
What Alex just said,
yeah,
right?
And they like that lifestyle and they don't want to have to worry about, you know, if something breaks. But, you know, on the other hand, if you are buying your home, it's probably a little bit more money and you've got property taxes. And, you know, to some degree, you might be able to offset income taxes with that. But It is not unusual. You're seeing a high percentage of millennials renting for longer before they buy their first home.
So my takeaway from this show is no, not a bubble, because the lending practices are better. Mm-hmm. And you're probably, if you're going to try to get in a competition of you're going over and over and over the bid, beware. Make sure you have an inspection and an appraisal, right? And don't pay too much. David, yes?
Yes. I think that's a reasonable summary.
Good to have you both here. Thanks very much.
Thank you.